Baptist Church, 35th and Holly, and it is a speaker meeting followed by some discussion in Big Book and 12-step study. So if you are a gentleman and get the opportunity to come down on Thursday night, we'd love to see you. My sobriety date is October 23rd, 1997. And just as a side note, my wife and I, who this is my wife for those of y'all who don't know us, and we've been married for 25 years and just celebrated a anniversary 2 weeks ago tomorrow. So I can promise you that without Alcoholics Anonymous in my life, I would not be married. Part of the reason I got here was because one day I woke up and had a stack of legal papers tacked to my door that suggested I move out of my house. And that was a little bit of a wake-up call, whereas all the rest of the wake-up calls I had were not very effective. So, when I first walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not want to be here. I was one of those guys that thought he was not powerless over alcohol. I knew my life was unmanageable. There was a lot of chaos going on, but I thought I had an inherent right as a American male to drink every day at 5 o'clock, and I did that. I worked hard and I played hard, and I still work hard today, and I still play hard. I do it without alcohol. So my sponsor, who I met at the first meeting I went to, which just by chance happened to be the Oceanfront Men's meeting, and that was August 28th of 1997. So if you can do the math, you know that I didn't stay sober from August through October. So finally, when I got serious and I quit drinking and I quit using some other agricultural and other illegal products, he asked me a very simple question. He says, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And it was a yes or no answer. And I said, yes. And that's the same question I ask everybody that I sponsor. Are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And if they hem and haw, it's been my experience they're not ready. But I answered yes, and so he said, well, okay, here's the deal. I want you to write your story down chronologically and just write down whatever you remember. And so I wrote my story with a pen on a piece of paper so it couldn't be erased, and it became very apparent to me that I was powerless, combined with the fact that I wanted to drink every day for a while. And I heard my story told over and over again in these rooms when I was finally ready to identify with what you all had to say. So having written that story down, I got to a turning point, which for me was the fourth step. And I had been going to these retreats, these men's spiritual retreats called Matt Talbot, and one day I'm sitting at a Matt Talbot retreat, and I used to go to the step meetings and go, well, I'm working on that fourth step. And finally these old guys got tired of listening to me and said, go sit down, shut up, and write. Which I did, which came from that first step. All the resentments I had came almost directly from the first step I'd written. And so, you know, what happened for me is that when I got to the eighth step, all I had to do was look back at what I'd done on the first step and the fourth step. And all of the people that I owed amends to came directly from that writing. There were a few people that I added on the list for people that didn't fit into a resentment category or a sex category or some other, but those were the people I had done harm to that I wasn't mad at. So, you know, it's for me, this was a work in progress. The eighth step for me was very simple. It was just merely writing them down. and writing down, you know, what amends I needed to make. I don't know if we, the willingness, which it talks about at the very end of this chapter, is something I've had to ask for God's help on a regular basis. There's two parts to that step. One, writing it down and becoming willing to make amends to them all. I can tell you initially, I was not willing to make amends to them all. And so I had to ask for the strength from God to be willing to make amends. And slowly but surely, I've worked my way through most of them. I would like to sit here and tell you I've made all my amends, but I would be lying if I sat here and told you that. So thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Henry.
Thank you, Henry.
Henry's assertion that without Alcoholics Anonymous, he would no longer be married was independently confirmed. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. Some people we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order. But that is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. We lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores. We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries. Francis?
Okay, thank you. Well, I made my list and I was willing to make amends to them all. My drinking was primarily not in the state that I got sober in. So I got sober in Virginia Beach, and I did most of my drinking in Massachusetts because I went to college and lived up there. So a lot of my amends that I was able to make were immediate family. And there was another one that I'll touch on later on. But when I made my list, I was willing to make amends to them all. I had lost addresses and contact, and a lot of people that I had harmed, I had no idea how to get in touch with. So I knew in my heart that if God would put the person in my life, that I would be able to make amends. One person in particular that I had the most difficulty making amends with was my mother. And I will talk about that a little bit later on. The reason being is that I had a lot of deep-seated anger and resentment, and typical alcoholic, I, at the time, even though I had done the fourth and fifth step, I really didn't see all the damage that I had done. I had made many, many promises over the years to change and to do things differently. And when I got sober, I made the mistake, actually, of being one of the ones where I talked about this higher power when I made amends. And so that was misunderstood, and so I can talk about that more in a little bit. Thank you.
Thanks, Francis.
Thanks, David. First thing I was recommended to do by my sponsor is do not make any amends without talking to me. And, you know, it's been my experience that a lot of people that I've sponsored or not sponsored walk in these rooms and, okay, well, I'm sober for 30 days, I'm going to run out and say I'm sorry. And that just doesn't cut it. And the part of this paragraph talks about that the leading with the chin. I mean, until I understood what amends, first of all, I should make, because my sponsor and I sat down and went over my list, and a large group of people were crossed off my list. Because he asked me, well, what's your motive for making that amends? And, you know, on some of them, I didn't have a real good motive. And so he said, okay, well, that person, you can just cross them off. And I really believe that to work this step without a sponsor is like walking in quicksand. I have part of this, just by chance, highlighted. It says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And, you know, that kind of follows the whole seventh step. I mean, we give ourselves to God, both good and bad. Now, when I did my fourth step, I can tell you there wasn't a lot of good in there. You know, because I did it directly out of the big book. And so... for me, I was really emptying the garbage can. And I came to realize down the road that there was a whole lot of good in me, but that wasn't the initial reaction that I got. So I had to sit with my sponsor, go through the list, and the first person I made amends to was my wife. Because that was the most important person in my immediate family, and it was the one I needed to make the amends to first. And that was followed by my mother. And there was a number of people on my list who weren't alive that, you know, I had to write a letter to make that amends. So, you know, every person on my list kind of had a different set of circumstances and a different way to do them. So for me, I can't emphasize enough of what my sponsor was able to do for me in walking me through this step. And I think those folks that I've seen do it without a sponsor or without really paying attention to their sponsor, you know, do it with in peril. But I find that for me, I had to understand what I was making amends for. And it wasn't going to someone and saying, hey, I'm sorry for, you know, whatever the case may be. It just, that wasn't enough. It was about making things right. So thanks.
Thanks, Henry. So we'll continue on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be that he's done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Francis.
Thank you. So I had difficulty with my mother, when I got sober, she told me that I would never get sober, and so she did not think that I'd ever make it. And I was, but I went to AA, and I had a lot of encouragement from people in the rooms. The people in the rooms told me I could get sober, and they told me that all the answers were in the big book. So I was working the steps in the big book, and when I came to this step, I made amends to my mom. And when I made amends to her, it didn't really go over very well. But it talks about that in here, and we just, what's in our heart is what matters, and we're starting over, and we're doing the best we can, and we we make amends, and it doesn't matter how the other person reacts and what they do. And what matters is our intention, and that we have our higher power with us. And I really felt on the AA beam when I made amends, and that is so wonderful. To be honest with you, years later, when she was living, she would always throw up in my face things from when I was drinking and using. Even when I got married, I went to college, I got a career, I became very successful, I had two children, got married. But it was okay, because I knew in my heart I had a family with AA. I had a new family, actually. And I loved my mom so much, and I recognized at that point the damage that I had done over those years, and that I had really hurt her. And so it was acceptance, and we grew to respect each other and to honor each other. And we loved each other very deeply. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
This paragraph sort of talks about the crux of my dilemma, which is called procrastination, which is one of my character defects. I found that I could not look at what the other person did to me in order for me to go make the amends. Because every time I focused on what they did to me, I didn't want to make the amends. And that's why I had to employ prayer to say, okay, God, give me the willingness. Because if I started focusing on what they had done, even though they may have done something, that wasn't the exercise that was in front of me. The exercise in front of me is to clean my side of the street. I cannot change any human being. I just don't have that power. Albeit I sometimes try to do that because I'm pretty much a type A control freak. And I used to subscribe to the theory, lead, follower, get out of the way. And I find I can't do that today because that's just like a bull in a china shop. So I had to go to people and go, look, I'm here because I'm in recovery. I'm trying to clean up my side of the street. Here's the harm I did. And just take whatever it was that they dished out. What my experience has been is that most of the time they are very accommodating, and they're very I won't say energetic, but they are appreciative that you are going to them, or I am, and saying, okay, look, this is my part, this is what I did. And most of them just wish you well and say, thank you for being here. They don't all go that way, but I found that the majority do. But that's not what I can expect when I walk into any amends, because I don't know how that person's going to react. And it's really not my job to predetermine how they're going to act, because it's really in God's hands. I'm not in charge. I'm just there to clean my side. As a sidebar, when I made amends with my mother, it was in the last, she was not in real good health, and I knew she was dying, and we had that conversation, I'm the oldest of six kids. I think she loved me regardless of what I did. I could probably do no wrong in her eyes, but I know that I had done a lot of damage growing up, because I was always the one getting in trouble. The rest of my five brothers and sisters, I think they must have been blessed with you know, some kind of fairy dust, because they never seemed to get in trouble. But I was always the guy getting caught. I always got caught. And rightfully so, because I was doing so much stuff I shouldn't have been doing to begin with. So my experience has been that, you know, I have to walk in there and just clean my side and not worry about what the reaction is.
We're going to continue on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do, his faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling on admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. Should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We've made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Francis.
Yes, it is water over the dam, because what we do when we're drinking and using is in the past, and this is a new beginning. And to be able to clean up my side of the street and to take responsibility for my actions is very very humbling. And within that, you gain a lot of freedom. This step is really about forgiveness of myself and forgiveness of others. And when we have resentments, I've learned that until I forgive, I don't heal. And that's why these steps are in order, because we have the resentments in steps 4 and 5 that we write about, we share with our sponsor, and then we make amends for our part in it. And that's where we make the forgiveness, because we have to forgive others and we have to forgive ourselves. And when we do that, then we're able to really put the past behind us and start over again and start fresh. And so what I want to talk about now is a living amends, because when we get sober, each day we can be an example and we can be an instrument of our higher power as we go through in our lives, and pray for God to speak through us one day at a time as we work in our jobs and have relationships with people and get married and have children and all those good things. I am very grateful for the fact that I was able to do the make amends and to accept the outcomes, and I got a lot of good positive outcomes too. People were very happy that I was getting sober, believe me. And so it allowed for a new beginning. That's what these steps do. And the promises come after step 9, which if you really do the first 9 steps thoroughly, you walk through an archway of freedom, and the promises are coming true in your life. And for me, that really happened, because my heart and soul was the number one thing in my life when I got sober was my sobriety. I was told when I came in, if I put AA number 1 and didn't worry about anything else, leave it up to my higher power, that God would take care of everything else. And so for me, I had to start at the bottom. I got a job making minimum wage. I was in a living where I didn't want to live. I had to start all over again. And I had a lot of resentments about where I was living, where I was working, and having to go to AA. But God had me right where I was supposed to be. And God, this is a God-written program with the steps. And the steps are very in order and very healing to allow us the ability to process the old isms that we have, which alcohol is just a symptom, and put them behind us so we can start fresh and begin anew. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks.
Sorry.
I had a couple of instances where when I went to make amends, there were some unexpected things that did happen. In one instance, what's happened is that the gentleman I made amends to has some relatives that have struggled with alcohol and some other substances. And so he has called me up and said, you know, my nephew or whoever it might be could use some help. And I'd like to sit here and tell you that all those people got sober that he's called me up about. Most of them have not, but I've at least been able, because of making the amends, to be of service to somebody other than myself. When I got here, I was only of service to me. I felt like I was the center of the universe and that the world revolved around Henry. And what I've come to realize is that I'm just a little speck, probably unseen in a microscope when you look at the whole thing. I'm just a bit player. But I've been able to be of service to this gentleman with some of his friends and relatives. When I made amends with my brother, he was only interested not in anything for him, but that I make an attempt to patch up things with one of my sisters, who she and I have always been at kind of loggerheads growing up. And it was induced primarily by me, because I was always the antagonist in the situation, and then she would feed off of that. And so, you know, I made amends to her as well. And it was interesting that I got a letter from her saying basically, you know, I'm grateful I have my brother back. Now, I'd like to tell you that we don't go at each other and we still have that, you know, competition, that sibling rivalry that still exists sometimes. But my relationship is a lot different today than it was while we were growing up. And lastly, I'll talk for a minute about an amends I made with my dad. My father had died, 2 years before I got sober. And he died in 1995, and my son was born within a month after his death, and the only child that in our family that has blue eyes is my son, that are the same color blue as my father. So the amends I made with my dad is I had to write that down, and I went to his grave and I read that amends, and you know, the relationship my dad and I had, and it was we were at loggerheads all the time. And why, I don't know, other than it was my own self-centeredness, and I did not think that, you know, he had my best interest at heart, which after getting sober, I can tell you that the only thing he was concerned about is my best interest. And, you know, so I've heard someone else to describe their childhood. They said it was a mess before they got to AA, but after they've been in AA for a while, they realized that they had a wonderful childhood. And you know, that's exactly how I would describe it as well, that you know, my parents were always there, and I had to make amends to this man because, you know, I'm named after him. He was my father, and you know, the only way I could do that was to do that at his grave, and then to try and live a better life and to try and be a better father. And I'll end with this. My son and I had a big blowout a few nights ago. And I had to go the next day and make amends to him and say, look, that's a relationship that my father and I had, and I do not want to go there. It's not something that I want to relive being on the other side. So that's the experience that I've had with some of them.
Awesome. Okay, we're going to press on page 78. Oh, look at this. Most alcoholics owe money. We don't dodge our creditors, telling them what we're trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial pain. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go, before we're liable to drink again, if we are afraid to face them. Francis?
Thank you. One of the amends that really tore me up at the time was when I was living in Boston, going to school. I was in an MBA program, and I rented an upstairs apartment in a house. And what I would do is I would drink and pass out, and I smoked cigarettes. And one night I passed out, and I woke up and I could smell smoke burning. And I looked and felt around, and I could feel there was a burning hole in the couch I was on. So I stumbled in the kitchen and got jugs of water and brought them back and poured them in the hole and felt all around, thought it was fine, and left the room, closed the door, went in my bedroom and shut the door. Well, what happened was I woke up the next morning by the sound of sirens, and it was the fire department. And I opened the door, and there were the firemen running up the stairs with the hoses. And in the room that I had been in that I had passed out with a cigarette was that couch where nothing was left but cinders and the springs. And so they were dousing the fire and throwing the springs out the window. So I, needless to say, my landlord asked me to move out because I had caused a fire. And so I moved out and acted as if nothing had happened, the Jekyll Hyde that we are. I didn't tell anybody, you know, so I moved in with a friend, and that was one of my secrets I had inside. And when I got to the step and I made that list, I knew one of the most important amends was to call the people that I lived with and to pay for the damage. And as I shared earlier, at the time I was only making minimum wage. So I was very scared to call them because I knew I had caused a lot of damage. But I also didn't have their phone number. So I had to do some footwork. I had to call somebody to find out what their phone number was. And I finally got their phone number, and I called them up and I said, "Hi, this is Francis. I'm the one that used to live in your apartment and caused the fire, and I'm getting sober. I'm in AA, and I want to make financial amends for the damage that I did." And their reaction was, "We think that's wonderful. That's great that you're in a program and getting sober." And so they told me that what I needed to do was to send up every 2 weeks a check for $75, and all I had to pay was for the deductible, which was about $500. Now, at the time, I was only making $100 a week because the minimum wage back then, that we're talking in the early 80s, was not very much. It was $3 and something an hour. So I did that, and to be honest with you, it was the freedom that I was looking for. was to be able to do that and to make that amends and to send that check off, because that just ate a hole inside of me. So if you have any kind of financial amends like that, I highly recommend you make the amends. And in other areas, I have done financial damage, and so how I have not been able to get in touch with people, and so what I do is I try to give back in my community, is how I make a living amends, by living a sober life and giving back in my community, whether it's myself giving up time or making donations, and so that's how I take care of that. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks. Well, before I got to this fellowship, my wife, who was sober, we got married in 1989, and she suggested that I needed to make an amends. Now, I didn't know anything about AA, but I had a little issue going on with the IRS, and the issue was I had not filed taxes for 15 years. So the amends started, the financial amends for me started prior to me getting here, but it continued long after being in these rooms. I forget the day I got a release from the IRS, but I had quite a bit of sobriety at that point. I filed all 15 years in one day. So if you have some issues with the IRS, I can tell you that you can sort them out. It's not easy, it's no fun, and it costs a lot of money. But guess what? I owed them the money to begin with. I just chose not to send them anything. Now, on other financial reparations, I used to do a lot of borrowing, which was called stealing. But I would just say, well, I'm just going to borrow $20 from my dad's wallet, or I'd lift $50 from my mother's purse. And I did that on a routine basis when I was young. And so, you know, with one parent dead and the other one dying, I've had to, you know, do some indirect living amends, like my wife talked about, by giving to charities, by giving to people that, you know, could use the help, because, you know, I couldn't make those direct amends to my father because he was no longer present. So I've had to find other ways to do it. As far as just stealing from other people, I was somewhat cash register honest. And, you know, other than the normal, I'm in business at the beach, you know, I've tried to maintain a relatively stable, you know, financial history because my business depends on it. But, you know, I used to think that borrowing money, that I might pay it back one day. I had every good intention to pay it back, but I can tell you those days never came. And so I used to use the term borrow rather than steal because it sounded a whole lot better. I'm just going to borrow this money for a while. And you know, and when I got sober, I realized I was just flat out stealing from my parents. And fortunately for me, that's as far as it got. That still isn't good, but that is my history. And as far as people that I've sponsored, you know, this is a big deal breaker for a lot of people. this part of it, because, you know, they say, well, I can't afford it. Well, I don't think you can afford not to do it, is the bottom line, because that monkey's on your back for the rest of your life until you do something. And I can tell you, when I finally got rid of those amends to the IRS, it's a huge weight that was lifted off my shoulders, because they wanted a whole lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. And it came down to the point where, you know, I paid a big chunk at the beginning, and I paid every single month for a number of years, a lot of years. And when that burden was removed, I can tell you there's a lot of freedom in that. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, yeah, we're kind of dicey. We can do the last paragraph and just some brief comments if you like. Continuing on page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we've decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing, we have to be, we must not shrink at anything. Ransom.
And that's how I knew I had to go about my steps, is I had to give it 100%, 110%. And this is an honest program, and that we have to be honest, open-minded, and willing. And so I had to go to any length, like I shared earlier, and do whatever it took. I want to share also that in terms of my living amends, I sponsor a lot of women now, and for me that brings a lot of joy as far as giving back to others, because my life today is beyond, as I shared earlier, my wildest expectations, and I wouldn't have the life that I have today had it not been for these steps and working these steps in AA and being guided. These are God-written steps, I truly believe. And I believe that, you know, I'm so grateful to have, I say I'm a grateful alcoholic because I'm grateful actually that I have this disease. Because had I not had the disease of alcoholics, of being an alcoholic, I wouldn't have been willing to get on my knees and to be looking for other answers. And I wouldn't have been willing to listen and to believe in a higher power, a loving higher power that is in these rooms. And the higher power in AA is a loving, forgiving, understanding, compassionate higher power. And we are forgiven for our past mistakes when we were drinking and using, and this is a new life that we can live after we work the steps, and it truly is a new life, and it can be whatever we want it to be. And that's the joy of being sober, is you can accomplish anything, you can do anything, you can achieve anything, you can have any relationship. I mean, it's just amazing, the rewards and anything that you work with your higher power and co-create and pray for him to guide you and to give you the strength and to lead you on a daily basis to achieve what he wants you to do in this life, and you can do it. Thanks.
Thanks, Francis.
I'd like to thank David for inviting us tonight, and thank all of y'all for being here. I can tell you it helps keep me sober today. I was willing to go to any length when I got here. I'm still willing to go to any length today. I have a home group. I do service work. I take meetings into the psych center. I still go to retreats. I sponsor a number of guys, and you know, it was ingrained in me and just kind of hammered home that you keep doing the same thing in order to maintain your sobriety. And it's been my experience, having been around here for a little while, that When I go to the psych center, I can guarantee you every single time I go, there is someone sitting there with 15, 20, 25 years that's relapsed. And that is the guy I pay attention to in there. And I try and get him off to the side and say, what's going on? What happened? And it's always the same story. He lost the ability to go to any lengths. And so I continue to do that. And, you know, the amends process, I have to make amends, you know, as part of the process. I have to do it because I can't live with the feelings that I get today. And a lot of this is somewhat 10-step stuff, but, you know, I don't feel comfortable in my own skin if I'm walking around with that gnawing feeling in my stomach. It certainly isn't a spiritual feeling. I know that I have not been the best person I know how to be. And that's what this program to me is a character building process, you know? And I've gotten to the point today that I don't feel comfortable if I'm not doing the right thing. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thanks a lot, David.
Thank you.
Thank you, Henry.
Thank you, David.
All right, I'm going to pass the baskets in accordance with the Southern tradition. It states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Southern tradition is essential. Every level of AA service, it's both a privilege and a responsibility for... I completely lost my place. Nobody's listening anyway. General service officers remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight? Iran.
Hi, I'm very
welcome. Iran.
My whole group, just Sunday at 11 o'clock, at the Children's Care Hospital cafeteria. On June 29th, we'll be having a half measure that was nothing. Brunch, starting at 10 o'clock with brunch and potluck, so if you would like to break it, would be wonderful. As well as at 11 o'clock, Eric Kim from Richmond is coming down to talk about the ABCs. That would be Sunday, June 29th at the Children's Care Hospital EBMS.
Jason Alcoholic.
Go, Jason.
Jason. I'm the first planning meeting for the CP Highwater CPCPI convention meeting out this September. So be at the top of the office from 7 p.m. to see me at the meeting tomorrow morning.
Yes.
An Alcoholic is a new meeting starting at Kings Ranch Presbyterian Church, 745 Little Neck Road. It's a meditation meeting. They start with reflections, reading every day. It meets Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. And they have Starbucks coffee.
Wow.
Any other announcements? This group, the Simple Actions Group, and I'll draw your attention to this lovely blue flyer. There's more of them on this little table over to my right. We're having another supper and a speaker event on July 28th, right here in this room. The meeting will start at the regular time of 7, but we're going to have a potluck at 6 p.m. on July 28th. Will B. from Richmond is going to come down and share. So it is a potluck. Bring a dish if you wish. Feel free to take some flyers back to your own home group, or if you're a meeting makers, make it kind of person. Take them with you. Drop them off everywhere. All are welcome. No one's excluded. So again, that's July 28th, right here in this room. Supper and a speaker.
David.
Donna.
My name is Donna, alcoholic.
And Donna.
The West Kent group is having their 34-year celebration on July the 2nd over at St. Andrew's Church on Prince Center Road, just past Kent Boulevard going into West Kent. And it starts at 6:30. They're going to have the same speaker, a lady speaker from Hampton or Gloucester area, really strong speaker. And celebrating the 34 years, and they supposedly supplying all the food, so they just ask people to bring desserts and salads if possible. And my myself and some of my friends, we started a new meeting 5 weeks ago. It's an emotional sobriety meeting. It's called A New Frontier. It's at the United Church of Christ on the corner of Baby Boulevard and Wayland. It's Wednesdays at 7 o'clock, the same time that the hour before West Point.
Okay. For those of you who couldn't hear a word he said, Donna's got a bunch of stuff going on. You want to talk to him after the meeting?
It's not mumbling yet.
Yeah, I can't even hear you.
It sounds like I'm screaming. I don't know.
Okay, so any other announcements? Nice loud ones.
I'm sorry. I'm Mary. I'm an alcoholic.
Go, Mary.
Methodist Church next weekend, Sunday?
4 to 7.
Family fun. Bring the kids, you know, bring your families, potluck, and then just come on down to Chesapeake. It's at the corner of
Great Bridge and Battlefield.
Great Bridge and Battlefield. Come on down to Chesapeake. Love that, y'all.
That's a fun group.
Thank you so much.
All right, the Simple Actions, that's where we are now, is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. And to newcomers, not to embarrass anybody, we'd like to welcome you. Is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We just get your first name.
Hi, my name is Janice, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Janice.
Welcome. And if you are new, there's 7 steps that come before everything we talked about tonight. You don't have to run out and start paying that money back. You got time. speaking of sponsorship, sponsorship at AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, there'll be 2 people up here. Who are they? I think I'm one of them. Me and Casey. We'll be up here at the end of the meeting. If you just want to ask a question about what is a sponsor and you want any more information, we'll be up here. So again, can we thank Francis and Henry?
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who participated, and after we clean up tonight, everyone is invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Yeah, it's good. Good Mexican food. And where's Evan? You want to do the last 2 paragraphs on 164?
My name's Evan. I'm
Evan.
Hey, Evan.
Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Circle up and close. Thank you so much. Come on, no one.
Spread it out. Share love.
It's all necessary.
Debbie, would you lead us?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
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 Thank you so much. That was really great. Really,
that's what I remember.
It's nice to be honest and share our own.